Welcome to the Foul Frontier, Poultry Science Unplugged. On this show, we're going to break down the intricate world of all things poultry science. So join myself and my distinguished guests and experts in the field as we dissect the latest research and information on poultry production. Whether you raise broilers, turkeys, laying hens, breeders, ducks, etc., are a seasoned producer or just starting out, we've got you covered. The Foul Frontier is brought to you by the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture, Cooperative Extension Service, and the Center of Excellence for Poultry Science. I am Dr. Zach Williams, Poultry Extension Specialist for Live Production at the University, and I will be your host. So as one egg said to the other, let's get cracking. All right, well, welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Our guest today is Dr. Mick Fulton from Michigan State University. And our topic today is a little different than topics we've done in the past. We're not gonna really talk about a specific topic or like an area or disease or some production thing. What we're going to talk about is resources and education materials that are available for producers. So I'm going to start off and let Dr. Fulton tell us all about himself and his background.
So I am a veterinary pathologist that works at a diagnostic laboratory at Michigan State University. I've been here for 30 years in the process of thinking about retiring, and I will be retiring probably the end of March. I'm a professor of avian diseases. My job includes teaching research, service work, which is diagnostic cases, and then outreach or extension. And so I've been involved in a lot of education and also field work. So that's me.
Yep. And that's, well, you know, the reason why I asked you on this and to do this is because you have been involved in education and extension and service to the industry for a long time. And you're highly involved in several of the larger workshops and conferences. So, and we'll get to those in a little bit. First question. Why should producers or veterinarians, why should they seek out additional educational resources? Why should they look for other stuff or other materials out there?
Well, it brings up a story. You'll find that I have a few of those.
Stories on here.
When I first graduated from veterinary school, I worked in the northern part of Indiana doing large animal medicine. And I would go in and treat cows, did horses, pigs, you know, sheep, you name it, I did it. And one of the common things in my treatment and also in recommending post-treatment was you need to do it this way. And the common response was, well, that's not how my dad did it. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but your father was doing it all wrong. You need to find out what the science and the education is telling you and follow those procedures. So it's too easy if you've been in growing poultry for a long time, taking care of animals for a long time, to miss some of the new discoveries, the new changes, that the new improvements in terms of management. And working in the poultry industry changes at a dramatic rate, very fast. They're quick to adopt new technology, and it's important that a producer stays up to date with what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what's happening just in the laying hen, commercial laying hen industry the last 10, 15 years, and the switch to aviaries and cage-free from our conventional, it's been a huge shift. And, you know, producers that have been doing this for a long time, they need help and they need answers. And the broiler and turkey industry are the same way. There's so many new changes and challenges and management practices. You know, people aren't just out there on their own.
Yep. Hard to do that. And as you said, it's people are learning as they go, including people in education. Universities, especially when this change went from conventional cages to enriched, or well, that went to enriched cages and then to cage free in the layer industry. And everybody was trying to figure out what to do and how best to do that. And sometimes, you know, getting together with a group of people discussing that situation really improves your understanding and abilities.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, we don't have all the answers to all the questions, but some of us have some of the answers to some of the questions. And hopefully if you get together with more people, they'll have answers to other questions. So All right, let's talk about extension first. We'll go through extension and talk about our universities and what they offer for people, and then we'll talk about more of the large national meetings and some of our more formal educational events. So, you've been involved in extension and outreach for quite a while. Can you could you define that and tell us what the purpose of extension is? I know this is a hard one, right?
Yeah, well, I can tell you what the original purpose of intention was. And it kind of goes to the roots of Michigan State University. Michigan State University used to be called Michigan Agriculture College. And it was essentially to bring people who were farmers to a central place to learn new techniques and then disseminate that information. So that transpired into extension. And the extension in general is supposed to take new information, new knowledge, and provide it to farmers. And unfortunately, my experience, at least here in this state, and I'm sure in other states as well, is that the budget for extension is dramatically decreased because of lack of appropriate state funding. And so the efforts are the resources are getting fewer and fewer now. I know at least in major poultry producing states, the resources are very good. And that's probably a good reason why Zach's there. So, here at Michigan State, we didn't have much money to provide things, and it wasn't very strong. And our numbers of people working in extension were declining. However, again, in poultry states, I think it's very well supported. And part of that has to do with getting people involved in under to talking to the legislature and telling them the importance of what extension does.
Yeah, and that's true, and it has been it's shrinking everywhere. I mean, and we'll get to talk more about that in a second, but yeah. But we do. It's exactly as you said, extension, we're kind of like the arm of the university that's supposed to go out and meet the public and educate the public. If you look at Michigan State, they were the first land grant. And one of the charters of the land grant is to provide extension and provide that scientific education. And information to farmers and producers. Let's talk about the kind of the decline. At one point, I had to look this up. There were around 45 poultry science departments in the United States. Now we're down to six. And it was interesting that the decline started, they really peaked in the 1950s when the industry was had definitely not peaked, right? Like poultry production had not peaked. And so the poultry departments, if you look at it, they kind of grew up with the industry and then it started shrinking the numbers of departments. However, the industry is larger than it's ever been. And so we do get kind of stretched thin with extension. But there are six remaining poultry science departments that if people are in any of these states or neighboring states or anywhere, these departments do have extension components with them, and they can certainly help people out. But the remaining departments, we've got us here at Arkansas. We've got Auburn down in Alabama. You got the University of Georgia. You got North Carolina State, Mississippi State University, and Texas A&M. Now, so Michigan State used to have a poultry science department, right?
Yeah, that's true. I have lunch at least once a month with a lot of the people who retired from Michigan State University that have worked in poultry. And one of the gentlemen's actually preceded Zach in his job, and he said it when he was there in the 60s, they had six faculty members. And it was actually a separate department, poultry science department. But then, as like other places, it merged into animal science. When I came here, there were three faculty members, and now there's none because of Zach's vacancy. So, if you are a poultry person in an animal science department, quite often what gets the glory are the horses, because a lot of the students that want to be poultry or want to be veterinary students, they like horses. And so that's very popular. Or Cattle is another one. Either beef cows or for cow calf or for dairy cows. And then poultry is looked down upon, and so they don't get as much money of the department money, in contrast to those species that appear to be more important. I don't think they're as I think poultry is the most important, but I'm biased.
Me too, but I think the same way. But certainly, those that we just named have pretty significant extension teams and extension components and offerings. But there are other poultry science extension at other universities. Certainly, you've got a pretty good team at Purdue with like Dr. Darren Karcher. They do a lot of egg laying stuff and egg laying education down there. You've got University of Kentucky, where they've got a pretty good broiler group. Also, University of Tennessee, and UC Davis. You've also got a pretty strong team at Penn State. There's also a pretty good extension for poultry at Maryland and the University of Minnesota. So if you're in any of these states, you're mo most certainly have some extension that they're in your state. And a lot of these are some of the big pr poultry producing states. But certainly those are places you can reach out to. All right.
And I may, if I may tag on to that, usually you have to go to poultry meetings within a state and you'll find those individuals. So that's typically how you find out about them. You can certainly contact the university first, but you're more likely to meet them at poultry meetings within a state.
Yeah, especially if your state has like a state association, like Michigan does, or like we do here, a lot of other states where they have their annual meetings. All right, let's move into some of the national formal educational events. We've got two coming up pretty soon that you've been heavily involved with. One of them since the get-go. We'll talk about that one second. The first one I want to talk about is PEAK. This used to be a lot of people formerly knew it as Midwest. I think it changed 2 years ago. Is that when they
That's
changed the
correct.
name?
Yep,
Okay.
2022.
So can you give us a little background about the history of PEAK or Midwest?
Sure. I don't know specific reasons why that happened, but in 1971, poultry producers in the Midwest formed a nonprofit group that was called Midwest Poultry Federation, and they hold a convention each year. Typically, it was the first one I think was 1972 was started, and they have strong educational workshops for all the producers and all the species of poultry. And then they have a great exhibition floor. The people that I know contrast this with the meeting in Atlanta, the IPPE International Poultry Exhibition. That one has always been broilers because it's extremely popular in the South. It's a major industry there. Here in the Midwest, at this meeting in Minnesota, it's typically turkeys and egg layers and with some broilers, but certainly not the stress of that. And so it's a great meeting for the people who are in those specific areas. The salespeople I talk to say they do more business at the Midwest Poultry Federation convention than they do in Atlanta, primarily because of the audience that attends. And so there's multiple states involved. I think there's something like 12 or 13 states. And it's a nonprofit, so any money that's made from that typically it goes for scholarships for poultry education. It also, if there's enough money left over, then it goes back to the state associations. They get some money back from that process, but it's been going on quite a few years. Large attendance, probably about 2,000 people, I would say, 2, maybe 3,000. Excellent exhibition floor. And you have enough time to talk to people, which is good, in contrast to Atlanta, where you walk all over the place. And so it's much better one, I think.
Yeah, I like Midwest or PEAK. I typically like it better than Atlanta for the reasons you gave. It's smaller. You can talk to people more, have more in-depth conversations. So we'll hit the expo in a second. What about the so there's some educational tracks. There's I think is broiler, turkey, a layer one, feed mill, and then there's a business or leadership one.
Yeah, they're starting that now to they're trying to help new people develop leadership skills. And so that's another part. There's also organic layers are typically have a meeting held with that. So and then of course there's a nutrition symposium held typically the about a half a day before the meeting actually starts. So it's a very strong program there.
So, what's the emphasis on these, like the educational tracks and education programs? Is it more for producers? Is it for farm? Is it for scientists? Is it what's kind of the target audience here?
Sure. No, the nutrition symposium is primarily for, of course, people interested in nutrition, also for scientists to discuss some of the new changes. It may be a little overwhelming for producers, but the major focus for all of the educational tracks are for producers. It's designed specifically for producers to learn new information, to, see what's current, what the issues are, how to prevent, recognize, prevent, and solve some issues. So it's very practical and down to earth.
Yeah, I'm involved in organizing the broiler track, and that's our goal is practical and stuff that if a producer came, he could take that to his farm and make something out of it. So who can attend Midwest? Is this for everybody? Like
It
the
is.
expo or the talks, is for anybody who's involved
It's
in poultry?
open. Anybody that wants to come, pay the fee, come and enjoy the meeting. It's a very, as you say, low key meeting,
Yeah.
in contrast to a lot of others. And there's also a entertainment event that they typically have a band or something, and celebrate everybody getting together.
Yeah. They've also added a couple of things over the last year. So I think last year was the first year they did the Family Feud, right?
Yes,
Or like the game
exactly.
show, kind of like
Yep.
Family Feud. That was kind of fun.
Yep. They usually have some type of floor thing. I think they have usually a poker game where you go from booth to booth and you get a card, and so the highest hand wins. So there's a lot of activities involved. Sometimes there's a turkey cook-off on the floor where you can do that. They'll have turkey chili, but it's a pretty active event and very well attended.
Yeah. And so apart from the educational tracks, there's been some tech talks that are on the expo floor. What's the difference between those and say the educational events? Are there different goals for each one of those?
Well, I think they try to pick a certain topic that's more current and go more in depth than they do. Usually in educational sections, there's a limited amount of time, typically about 30 minutes. And so the tech talks are a little bit more in depth.
Okay. So the expo, like you said, the expo for that one is much smaller than IPPE, but it's more targeted for layers and turkeys. But then what might they have on the expo? What might you see there for someone who's never been to one of these?
To the you
It's
talking about
always a little
peak?
shocking when you first go into one of these expos and you see what they might have, but what might they see on the floor? Like what might people be selling?
At peak?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're going to see a lot of equipment. I mean, you'll see there's typically three or four different people who provide cage systems for the layers. You have to understand a cage system isn't really a cage. Is actually what's called an aviary, where the chickens can run around, jump, and do all sorts of stuff. Plus, they have to have some way of laying their eggs. You'll see turkey equipment, both feeders and waterers. You'll see salespeople or exhibits for vaccines, for medications, for disinfectants. You'll see last year it was kind of cool. One of the things that people are concerned about are wild birds flying around their facilities. So there was actually a gentleman that had a hawk that he rents hawks or around poultry facilities. There was actually another person that had a laser that would flash around to try to scare birds away. Rodent control, pest control, feed, different feed things. They'll have a composting vessel where they can actually put a dead bird in one end and it comes out as dirt in the other end. So you'll see lots of things, and it's always fun to see what's new in the equipment world.
Yeah, that's one thing about these is that I like is if someone's got something new, it's either going to be at peak or they're going to have it at IPPE. And that's really going to be the first time that a lot of people that will see it in person. So I do enjoy that aspect of the expo. All right, let's move on from peak. This year it is mid-April. I think it's April the 18th and 19th.
Yep.
I'll put some links for registration and everything in the notes for the podcast if people are interested in it. And it
Yeah,
will
it's
be
actually
in,
17th, 18th, and 19th.
in Minneapolis. So it'll be in
That's
Minnesota.
correct. Yep.
Hopefully it won't be snowing like it was a
Well,
couple of years ago.
if as you well know, they have what I call them gerbil cages,
That's right. They
essentially.
do have the tunnels.
Yeah, so they have because Minneapolis gets cold and has so much snow, they have walkways above the street where you can go from building to building to building. So I typically walk in that from my hotel, which is like 3 blocks away, to the convention center, and never have to go outside.
Yeah, it's nice. All right, let's talk about Poultry Health Management School. Now,
Sure.
this is one you've been involved in since the very beginning, correct?
Correct. We've been doing this for over 20 years now. Essentially, for the old timers, might not be aware of this one. There used to be a vaccine company called Salisbury, and they were in Iowa, and they would have a school where they would bring in producers, where they would talk about the different diseases. They'd actually infect chickens with different things, and then they would humanely kill them and then dissect them so they could see what was going on. So it was great, very well received, a great educational source. But Salisbury, like most vaccine companies in the poultry world, there's consolidation. So they were bought out, and that educational opportunity ceased to exist. So there was a void. And so it was decided by two other colleagues, Teresa Morishita. She used to be at The Ohio State University, and Rob Porter, who was at Purdue University. We kind of all got together, thought it'd be a good idea to try to replicate that. And so that's essentially how it started. Typically, it's 2 days. We'll do a turkey and broiler workshop, or meat bird workshop, for 2 days. And then we'll do a layer workshop for 2 days. And so we've asked many of the industry people. Typically, these are industry veterinarians that work for breed companies, or work for vaccine or medication companies. We'll have them in. We also have nutritionists come in. We typically alternate the topic from year to year. We go from disease, when we go to a section on laboratory work and diagnosis, then we go to treatment. We also then go to nutrition and then management. So it kind of cycles from year to year. And so that's kind of the process we have. It's very well attended. Typically, we'll have 40 to 50 people who come to learn about broilers and turkeys. And those are just the attendees. And then the people that also help out with that, including people from universities, we'll have about 20 instructors at least. And they go through a hands-on lab on both days. And then for the layers, we typically have about 90 attendees, and somewhere around 30, 20 to 30, also industry people and people from universities that help with that process of the lab. So that's kind of the what is involved.
What's your primary audience?
Our primary audience are people that work in barns. So those are
So producers, the people that are,
producers. You got it. So we vary. Sometimes we'll get middle management people that may be complex managers, and then sometimes company owners will come as well, and we've had them from all over the world come to our courses.
Can you talk about the hands-on labs? Because
Yeah.
that's pretty unique to, or it's kind of unique to this school. Can you talk about what an attendee would do at one of those hands-on labs?
Sure, I can talk about typically the one that most people like. Dr. Porter from University of Minnesota has a bunch of fixed specimens. And so with all the different diseases, he'll have you go through and he'll give you a history. He'll have the birds open so you can see what's going on, and you're supposed to try to make a diagnosis, figure out the disease, talk about prevention or treatment. And then usually there'll be veterinarians there to help kind of help the students as they go through that process. I got ahead of myself. The day typically before they see that is often just normal bird drawing blood samples, collecting swabs, doing a normal dissection, a normal, we call it necropsy, to see what the birds look like. Just people get used to that process. There's also, we've had things of different qualities of feed, so they can look at different look at see especially distillers grains, some that are have been overcooked and have a different color and smell, and that don't have the ingredients, that ones that aren't, they're handled appropriately. So that's one of those. They'll have vaccines where you can actually inject birds or learn about the different vaccine techniques. And most people who speak typically will follow up with lighting. Maybe they'll have a light display for different types of lights. So that's typically what the labs are involved in. They have people explain what the exhibit is, what it's about, and then they have students interact usually in small groups.
Yeah. So it's very day-to-day stuff, but you're almost at a one-on-one with either someone who is like a technical expert in that or an academic expert or a veterinarian that does that all the time. So you covered topics. What else? So this it moves. This is kind of unique also from like IPP and Peak are set. Like Peak's going to be in Minneapolis and IPP is going to be in Atlanta. But Poultry Health Management School does move. So it's not in, if it's not in your state now, in a couple of years, it might be. So what typically are the states that this will rotate between?
Certainly, we started off with where the people were located. So usually Ohio State, or usually the Ohio Diagnostic Laboratory, and then also we had it at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. Of course, they've had it at Michigan State multiple times, where I'm located. We've been the University of Minnesota, where Dr. Porter is. We also have been the University of Wisconsin when Dr. Porter was at there at University of Wisconsin. We've held it at Iowa State University, where Yuko Sato, another of our veterinarians, and people who a person who's on the board as well. And we've held it in Missouri when we had one of our speakers that we worked with. We've had it down there, and we look forward to maybe holding it in Arkansas with Zach, since he's had experience with it, and I think it'd be a great thing to have in his state.
Yeah, we got enough industry down here. We can fill up some spots. Good. Anything else you want to say? Oh, what are the dates typically for the school?
We always do it in May, soon after graduation. The reason we do that is because we typically go to university campuses, and because they have the facilities to have dead birds or birds, live birds, that we handle and do blood samples, that type of stuff. So it's usually soon after graduation. Graduation at universities is usually the first week in May. This year, we're starting off May 14th and 15th for turkey broiler, and then following up the 16th and 17th for the egg layer school.
All right. Anything else you want to say about Poultry Health Management School?
We've been blessed because so many of the people who are out there in industry working with producers come to our school and help out and teach it. It's not a real Egghead, I guess, would probably use that terminology. It's not high level discussion, but it's more practical, and hopefully you learn stuff, take home, you feel comfortable applying it. And we try to listen to people to attend. We usually have a evaluation at the end of each sessions, and then we pay attention to that and modify it to try to do a better job the next time.
Yeah, you usually do have a pretty good mix of speakers and presenters and teachers between academic and industry. So you don't just get this whole like academic thing where we kind of get in our little world here sometimes. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about IPPE. This is the big one. I'm not going to, we'll talk about it some. So IPPE, of course, is the large expo down in Atlanta every year. And I tried to look at some history of it, but it's kind of hard to find. Like I tried to find when the first year was or any sort of old history. I couldn't find anything. Do you happen to know?
No,
I
I
know it's been
don't.
going on for a while.
Well, my first attending there was probably 86, maybe 1986. And it was huge at that time. And it's an amazing show. And unfortunately, working at a university, you don't have a lot of money to travel. And your boss kind of oversees where you're spending the money. My boss, when I first got to Michigan State, was actually a poultry person in his previous life. And so as he and I actually went to IPPE, if you've never been there, it's kind of a it's you'll drop your jaw in awe because a lot of the drug companies will have hospitality suites. I remember being there for like 2 or 3 days and never having to pay for a meal or a drink. And some places will have a country western band playing, a famous band, and it's very awe-inspiring. So he knew that it wasn't just for my education, it was for fun too. So he would not let me go
Yeah.
anyway. And it started out at that time, though, it was a lot of broilers, very little processing, on some layers, but very little caging and things like that for layers. And so, but the last time I went was probably I asked to speak down there for a program, I think. And then when I went there, it was probably 50% or more processing equipment, and not as much about raising birds as what it has been in the past. And not only that, it went from like one huge exhibition area to multiple exhibition areas. I mean, you get tired of walking with
Yeah,
that show.
I got some statistics on it for it. So this year, for because it's in January every year, it'll be really cold down there in Atlanta. So there were 1,427 different exhibitors, so different companies that had paid to have booths and were selling equipment. It was in the A, B, and C halls in the Georgia World Congress Center, which if you've never been, it is gigantic. They had all around 620,000 square feet of floor space. And then they had 31,000 plus registered attendees. And this is an international one. This is a big international expo. This year they had over 130 different countries that came to this from all over the world. So it's big. The expo is huge. I don't know. It's probably one of the biggest in the world. I'm not sure. But like Mick said, it's about half and half now, I would say, between processing and production. You've got production in one of the halls and then processing in the other hall. But it's gigantic. It is definitely awe-inspiring the first time you come in. And again, like the expo at peak. If you want to see something that someone's come out with, their newest, latest, and greatest stuff, it'll be there. They'll have it proudly displayed on the floor. And so it's a good way to see what's coming out and what's the latest and greatest.
And they'll probably have more time to talk to you. So, a lot of places, some of those expos, if you're not going to be a buyer, they don't want to talk to you. But I think the peak, the people take time and explain, their new systems and things like that.
Yep. And that's my experience too, because I'm a university. I'm never buying anything, but I always go around and try to see what's new. And most people, they're always willing to talk to you and try to like explain and tell you what's new. And but there's also a huge educational component to IPPP that I think a lot of people don't know about. And so there's really, I guess, two educational kind of components. There's the scientific presentations, which are more for the academics and the researchers, and that's typically the Monday and Tuesday for IPPE. But I looked it up, and there's also there's a couple of different groups that are there. I think there's like a meat group, there's a pet food group, and a feed group. I can't remember what their exact names are, but there are over 80 hours of educational programming available at IPPE. Some of it's fee-based, some of you have to pay for, but a lot of it is free. And so, and that's, I thought that was pretty incredible that there's that much that's offered there. And I think a lot of people may not be aware that, because the expo is kind of a little overwhelming, not over, well, yeah, a little overwhelming, and that kind of overshadows some of the educational stuff. But that is available there at IPPE as well. And so in your experience, who attends IPPE? Who do you see there?
Well, typically it's broiler producers, and company owners would be the biggest thing because they're the ones who are going to buy the equipment. I haven't worked a lot with the broiler industry. I've worked with the turkey industry and some of the broiler industry, and the broiler industry is different. Sometimes the companies who are contract the broilers for like for contract growers, they'll recommend certain types of equipment. So the farmer isn't the one who actually decides about purchasing. In contrast to the egg layers and turkey producers, they make their own decisions, and so they it's not as contracted. If I was raising broilers, I'd probably go to both IPPE. It's certainly, it's a great show. If you're doing broilers, you should be there. And then I'd probably also attend the peak in Minneapolis just to see, what's going on locally, trying to figure out if there are things that turkey people are doing that I could adapt to my process. And certainly egg layer people now, since the birds are on the floor, they're learning a lot of stuff about them. So, it's always good to listen to other different species to get an idea.
And IPPE is in Atlanta, and it doesn't move. It's there every year, and so that is pretty much in the heart of broiler country. All right, so let's look at some other stuff around the country. Let's start with Michigan. You just had the winter seminar last week, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Each winter, the Michigan Association, Michigan Allied Poultry Industries, or MAPI, with the university puts on an educational event. And they've done that for as long as I've been here. And for some reason, they hold it in the wintertime. Usually it's in February. And so the weather can really be different here in Michigan. I've been at somewhere when it was time to go home, there was 12 inches of snow underground, new snow underground, so, but it's always very well attended. Again, good practical educational talks about different subjects, typically water, feed, ventilation, diseases, often trends of those types of things. So it's stuff that you can take away. And the other thing we do is because of National Poultry Improvement Plan, requires a 14-step biosecurity plan, and that people have to be trained on biosecurity once a year. We use that as an opportunity to certify our attendees as having gone through a biosecurity. So that's another thing that we use in that plan in the seminar.
Y'all should probably look at putting that online or something for people.
Yeah.
Yeah,
You're charging.
I think you call it the winter seminar because the winter never ends in Michigan.
True.
If you
Well, it does in
had,
May.
well, that's true. Sometimes it doesn't end until June.
True.
What? Let's see. So we got the winter seminar in Michigan. Other close ones to you, we got the egg school at Purdue.
Correct.
That's a pretty big thing for our commercial egg layers. Can you speak about that for a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't attended since Darren's been in charge. When I was at on faculty at Purdue, I spoke in it. It's essentially a program that tries to teach all the egg producers about the issues associated with egg production. And a lot of it has to do with the quality of the product and monitoring those types of things. And it's very well attended, and I'm sure very well run by Dr. Karcher. He's known a lot in the egg laying world since he does a lot of work with cage free and the effects of the chickens with cage free systems.
Yeah, that's a very good one. I didn't go to it when I was up there, but I always heard good things about that. Other places, University of Tennessee now has a master grower program. That's online for producers. It's aimed more at the individual farmer, and it's online. I kind of went through it a little bit. They can take different credits and different courses. Very comprehensive for just day-to-day broiler production. Who else? The University of Georgia has quite a few. They have their large international short course, which is held right after IPPE every year. And then they do a lot with ventilation and house management. So they have cold and hot weather management, programs, and they have some food safety. Here in Arkansas, we have the Poultry Federation has quite a few throughout the year that are really large conferences. We've got a food safety one in the spring. We have a production and processing one in the fall. And then they have our large one that's kind of over encompassing everything in the summer. Here at the University of Arkansas, we do a couple. We're starting, or I'm starting a broiler academy in June, which will be like a short course for broiler producers, new hires, et cetera. We also do a USDA emergency response training for any of like the foreign animal disease or emergency response events through the USDA. We have a newsletter. We also do Poultry 101, which is more of a meat quality, meat science. And then there's other places like Maryland and Delaware have, they actually are one of the few places left that have like grower workshops. A lot of broiler states, typically because they're contracted, don't have a lot of grower workshops throughout the year. But I know Maryland and Delaware have quite a few large broiler grower workshops. Well, that was hard to say. Throughout the year. So those are some others around the country and maybe in some of our listeners' neck of the woods. And some of these are online as well, so you can listen in. So we're going to wrap up here, and I want to finish with diagnostic labs. Because that's certainly where you've spent the majority of your academic careers and is in a diagnostic lab. And I think maybe a lot of people don't know about these labs or maybe not quite sure what the purpose is or what information they could get from a diagnostic lab. So what just start out, what's the purpose? What are these diagnostic labs for?
Sure. Well, it varies. Typically, there's an animal diagnostic laboratory in about every state, and it will vary who has ownership of that laboratory. Some are the state government owns that laboratory. Others, the university owns the laboratory, or there's a combination of both. Sometimes there'll be a university diagnostic laboratory, and the state helps support it in terms of regulatory testing. And it's to test for all animal diseases. The primary focus is to find and diagnose animal diseases so that you can prevent catastrophic events from happening. And it's also does a food safety because there are certain things that animals can have that can cause problems in the food chain. And so they're all designed that way. Here in Michigan, the university has the diagnostic laboratory. I used to work at the diagnostic laboratory in Indiana. That's also university owned, but they get a large amount of funding from the state government. Here at Michigan, we get no funding from the state government. Each laboratory will vary in terms of the types of things, cases they submit. I mean, we have whole animals are submitted, parts of animals, blood, you name it, we get it. If it comes out of an animal or it can be taken out of an animal, we get it. And it doesn't matter to the animal. Sometimes we get, stuff from reptiles and snakes and zoo animals. But each individual state will have a certain way. When I was at Purdue, in Indiana, a veterinarian had to submit the sample. Here at the Diagnostic Laboratory at Michigan State, anybody can send in tissues or things from the diagnostic laboratory. And we get samples from all over the world. We have a very strong endocrinology laboratory. We also have a very strong toxicology laboratory. Part of that was due to an error made where they had PBBs, polybrominated biphenyls, which is a fire retardant. Somebody in a feed mill mixed it up and put it in cattle feed. And so it went out through a lot of the dairy cows, and then it caused lots of problems with the cows weren't able to conceive. They were had poor immunity. And so it took a lot to be able to find that. So the state decided they would make a real strong lab, and that's what we are. There's a thing called National Animal Health Laboratory Network. There's something like 34 or 36 laboratories in the United States that are part of a web or network that does testing for catastrophic diseases like high path avian influenza, African swine fever, foot and mouth disease, those types of thing, because there is a federal national diagnostic laboratory, but it would be overwhelmed in many cases. So let's say a case of high path avian influenza. We had a case here recently in a turkey flock. And so samples originally will come to our laboratory. We can perform the same tests that the national laboratory will do, but because of export and a lot of legal problems, we're not allowed to make the diagnosis. We have to send the samples to the National Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory in Ames, Iowa. They will repeat what we did and they confirm the diagnosis. So we have a non-negative is a term that's used, non-negative for high path avian influenza, and they said it's high path avian influenza. So that's the basic purpose. But I get cases from somebody that has six chickens in their backyard. They're all named. I'll get maybe Aunt Susie that died, and they want to know why it died. But I get multiple cases from farms that have 13 million chickens, egg-laying chickens, and so and I get broiler chickens from a lot of breeders. The company locally slaughters about 800,000 a week, and that's a small drop in the bucket compared to Tyson and some of the big people. But they need support too, and so it's a good source to be able to figure out if you're struggling with things. We have things that a lot of company labs that may be for larger producers that we have things that they might not have just because they can't afford to do it for something they would use intermittently.
Yeah, you did answer my next question. I was going to ask you who can use the services, but it sounds like everybody. It sounds like everybody pretty much can use a diagnostic lab.
Yeah, at Michigan, that's typically how it works, but you can. If it's some other state like in Indiana, you could just contact the veterinarian, have the veterinarian submit it. That's all. And when I was there, they would have we the owner would bring it in, and then the veterinarian say, charge it to my account. So that's how it worked.
What about how are these typically? So you talked about state versus federal versus university funding, but what about
Private funding.
costs for the people who are using the services?
Well, I mean, the cost will vary depending on how much state funding laboratories get. So it used typically in poultry states, a lot of the regulatory testing for poultry diseases is subsidized by the state. They have typically a budget, a line item budget. That's the way it was in Indiana. And so the cost for poultry, at least, wasn't exactly how much it actually cost to run the test. Let's put it that way. Here at Michigan, our tests are more expensive because we get no state funding for that process. So it kind of varies. Most places will have their fee schedules. If you want to just do search, an internet search for diagnostic lab, animal diagnostic laboratory, and then your state. And then they typically have a website, and you can have their fees listed, and ours are listed up on our website. Ours is animalhealth.msu.edu. So pretty simple.
Yeah, I always tell everybody to call ahead and
Yep.
know exactly what you're getting into, and whether or not you should, show up with your chicken or go through some other route or your veterinarian, and how much it'll cost.
Yeah, and that's a word of caution. If you decide to show up in a diagnostic lab with a bunch of dead chickens, don't take them inside to where the ladies are. They freak out when they see people carrying the dead animals.
Yeah.
Leave them in your vehicle, and then just go ahead and talk to them.
Yeah, so either call ahead or go in and check and see what's going to go on. All right, so before we're going to wrap up here, any parting words of wisdom for our listeners?
My suggestion, if you suspect something, try to get help early. It's very, very common. I've been a veterinarian for over 40 years. People usually don't start worrying to their animals till late Friday evening, or late in the afternoon on Friday, or when it's time to be the weekend, they say, "Oh shoot, I'm not going to get a veterinarian." If you suspect something, watch it for a day. If it doesn't go away, you probably should get help. The sooner you get in a you get onto a problem, the sooner you're going to be able to fix it, or not let it get to where it's really bad.
Yeah, and that's the same. We see that in for extension too. People let it go and let it go and let it go. Then all of a sudden they're like, "Oh, we need help." And you're like, "You're beyond help." So yeah, start early. Get if whether it's diagnostic or education or help, just start before it becomes a problem. So all right, Mick. Well, thank you again for being on the show,
You're welcome.
and we want to thank everybody for listening. And we'll see y'all next time.
Thank you for tuning in to the Foul Frontier Poultry Science Unplugged. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the world of poultry science. Be sure to subscribe so that you can stay updated on the latest episodes. If you have any questions, comments, or just want to reach out to us, you can do so on social media or via email at zwilliams@uada.edu. That's zwilliams@uada.edu.